Hello and welcome to Real Stories with Random Writers. I'm R.A. Spratt and I'm here with Jacqueline Harvey and Tim Harris. And today's special guest is Candace Fox. Candace is the author of the Crimson Lake series, the Detective Harriet Blue series, co-written with James Patterson, and the Archer and Bennett series. And her most recent books are The Murder Inn and Devil's Kitchen. Welcome to the show, Candace. Woo! It's lovely to see you. This is a pre-story story. Candace and I last met at a charity function, and Candace is still traumatized because the men in our debate teams were just ignored
us. They had a lot of time for us because they were so enamored with themselves.
But we're here.
And
now.
I'm feeling guilty because I brought them together to that event. So, anyway, we shall move on.
Yeah, let's start.
We'll be less traumatized by this event.
They don't need it.
Yeah. We'll find out next time we talk to Candace how traumatized she is by this. Okay. We're all authors, which means we're storytellers. Normally, we write our stories down, but for this podcast, we're going to tell them out loud instead. And today, we're going to be telling tales about rescues. Okay. So I'm going to preface this with saying we set this theme up because we know Candace is a friggin' legend, and she goes around rescuing things, and there's super cool videos on the internet of her rescuing things like animals, not like, don't get the wrong idea. But I am a writer, and I've been a writer since I was 22. I have lived a very staid life, and I rarely leave the house. I mean, not even to go into my own garden. So I don't often get to rescue things. But a few years ago, I was fortunate. I'm fortunate enough to get to be a hero. And this is many years ago. This is like 20 years ago, you know, in the halcyon days before I had children. You know how it is when you don't have children, you can actually focus on your career and speak to your husband and things like that.
You can leave the house in under 15 minutes.
Yes.
Door to in the car, 2 or 3 minutes.
Amazing. Yeah, or also you cannot leave the house because you don't have to go
forever.
So anyway, at this time I was a full-time writer working on about 3 different TV shows, but I was also a Taekwondo and Hapkido instructor. So I worked Saturday mornings as well as working in the week. So Sunday was my only day off. So I got up one Sunday morning and it was a beautiful day and I sort of slept in a bit and I thought, I'm going to have a nice hot bath to start the day. So I go out to the bathroom, I run a hot bath and I get in. And you know that beautiful moment when you soak in and you're just like, and you know, I've probably literally been beaten up by a bunch of like preschoolers the day before at Taekwondo. So it was just like a real, oh, this is so good. I just like sink into the deep relaxation. And thinking of it now, it's probably like 16 years because I've got a 16-year-old since I've felt that level of relaxation. But it was really that beautiful, sweet moment. And I sink into the bath and then there's a knock at the door, you know, knock, knock, knock. And it's my husband and he's like, Rachel. And I'm like, what? And he's like, Rachel. I'm like, what is it? And he's like, there's smoke coming from the neighbor's garden. I'm like, ah, so? And he's like, I think there's something on fire over there. Now, just so you understand, we were living in my parents' house at the time because my parents, when my dad retired, moved back to England for a couple of years. So we moved into their house because it's much nicer than anything we could afford. And I'm the youngest of my generation in our family. So all my cousins are older and I will permanently, even though I'm nearly 50 now, I am permanently in my family, the young, stupid one. No matter what I do, I'm the idiot you never asked to do anything. So when I moved into my parents' house, I'm going to live in this house better than anyone has ever lived in this house before. And I was determined to impress all the neighbors. So I was their best neighbor. And when my parents came back, they'd be like, oh, you're back. Where's Rachel? So anyway, so I'd be really good to the neighbors. Like one neighbor, they got broken into and I'd gone over when their alarm went off and scared off the burglars and called the cops and I got all these brownie points. So now my other neighbor, that something's on fire at their house. And I'm like, oh, I suppose we better deal with this. We can't just ignore this like when we, you know, in the city and you would do. So I'm like, well, just go get the hose and put the fire out. And my husband's like, oh, where's the hose? Because Angus has zero practical skills. He's a lot like you, Tim. I remember the time you broke your banner and you didn't even know how to use a power drill. I was horrified and you said that you get people from Airtasker to do things like that for you. Anyway, so my husband didn't even know where the hose was. Okay, so I'm like, go get the hose. And he's like, oh, where's the hose? And I'm like, oh. So I get out of the bath, I dry off, I put my clothes on. I'm like, you know, cursing his name. I go out into the garden. I go and I plug in the hose, I grab it and I run down to the far fence and whoop, It just like, it's not long enough. It's like 7 meters too short. And you can see the smoke coming up and I'm like, oh. So I go and look over the fence at this point and it's like the compost bin is on fire. And it's more serious than it sounds because there's all this ivy that, you know, her husband was in the Navy. He was never there. They've got four kids. She's not spending a lot of time in the garden. It's really overgrown. And about like 3 meters in all direction around this compost heap, all the undergrowth is on fire and their shed is right next to it. And I'm thinking if they store their petrol for the lawnmower in that shed, we're in a lot of trouble, you know, in about 5 minutes. So I'm like, I'm not going to say a word, but, you know, I'm thinking, I've got to do something quickly. So I run back into the house because we have a fire extinguisher because I used to barbecue on the fire escape when we lived in a flat and I once had a 2 meter high fire coming off my little Weber barbecue because I'd accidentally put too much fire starter in it. So anyway, ever since then, my husband, he bought me a fire extinguisher. So we had one in the kitchen. So I run in and I pick it up and it's not that big. It's like the size of a 1.5 liter Coke bottle, although they don't come in 1.5 liters, do they? They come in 1.25 liters. So it's the size of a Coke bottle. I run out. I leap over the fence like a superhero. I was like very athletic. I was quite impressed with myself. I was a bit thinner and younger then. And I run over. I bust it out. And of course, it's actually much harder to get a fire extinguisher going than you think. But I finally rip it out. I go, shh. I put it all out and I put all, I find their hose and I put everything out and get all the undergrowth done. And I was so pleased with myself because I knew I now had maximum ever brownie points with this family. I went around and put on a note on their door because they'd been at church too. So they, you know, like they were connected to God. Like God would see me doing this because they were at church while I was putting the fire out. So it's like, I was not just getting brownie points from them. It was like I was helping someone who's a veteran in the Navy. God was involved because they were at church. And it's like, I could not get more brownie points. And so I was super pleased. So that was my humble domestic rescue mission.
Were they pleased? Were they pleased?
Oh, yes. I got a box of Rose's chocolates out of that. You know? Thank you very much, Mums.
Remember the old Rose's chocolates ads that thank you very much. Thank you very, very, very much. I still sing those.
Thank you very much for doing the dishes.
Thank you very much. Thank you very, very much.
Whoever came up with that was very, very good.
Yeah, and there's no songs like that anymore that tell a narrative. My favourite one was got a call from Mr. Fryer. He's ringing up the kitchen looked a fright from the little dinner last night. Yep. Although it looked quite sickly, I had to clean it quickly with spray and wipe all purpose. It cleans up every.
Oh my gosh! Well done,
Brain Man. Brilliant.
Yes, everyone knows it. Yep.
It's great marketing.
Right, they don't have those anymore.
Kids don't know about it. They don't understand. So if you just suddenly start singing a jingle, they're just like, what was that? Because they just don't have them anymore.
and they were powerful marketing tools. Remember that McDonald's did the we'll give you a discount or a free something if you can say the what's in it, the recipe or the ingredients.
Yeah,
sorry, in a big bag.
Oh, two all beef patties, lettuce, cheese, pickled onions, on a sesame seed bun.
Yeah, that's the one. Yeah.
We all know it. Amazing.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, see, I know a theme song that I've never even heard the ad because it was in England before I was born, but my mum used to sing it all the time, which was nuts or hazelnuts. Cadbury take them and they cover them with chocolate. And now I say that I realize it's racist.
That's probably
the original as well. Like you hear the original go, what?
That's the AO, you know.
Yeah, but 50 years ago, that was all the thing on British radio.
Yes, yes. So Candace, you are renowned for your rescues of animals of late. Mm-hmm. What have you got for us? What's your most recent exciting rescue?
Look, I'm addicted to animal rescue, and I've rescued everything from duck eggs to a bandicoot. I did a bandicoot. Wow. And I generally bring my 4.5-year-old daughter with me to these rescues. There's a lot of possums. There's a lot of birds. So when you get something unusual like a bandicoot, I remember that one. She was in the bath and I saw it come up because it's just an app and it comes up and it said bandicoot. And I snatched that child out of the bath like an eagle snatched. Water and I threw her in the car stark naked and I was in after her. I was like, go, it's a bandicoot. So I was here at home and she'd gone to bed and I was sitting there with Tim, trying to have quality time with Tim, and the alert came up and it said a wallaby. And usually a wallaby rescue is just, it's been hit by a car. Can someone go check its pouch, see if there's a baby in there? So it's not terribly exciting. But this one said fully functional wallaby trapped in someone's backyard for 3 days. You know, and it's got to be like physically removed. And I was like, yes, except yeah, I'm going. And I drove out into the dark of the night with only a doona cover, because the literature says if you're going to rescue a wallaby, stick it in a doona cover, right? But it doesn't, like, because the rescues are never a fully functioning wallaby. They're always a very sick wallaby or one that's been hit by a car and it's not moving a lot. This would bode very badly for me, this advice about the doona cover. Anyway, armed with my doona cover, I drove there.
Can I just ask about the doona cover? Like, was it your doona cover? Was it your
daughter's? It was my doona cover. I just picked a doona cover.
So it wasn't like just a spare random selection of doona covers if you've now got in your cover.
No, it's just because I've got girls too, and I know most of my doona covers are like Elsa doona covers and, you know, Frozen. Yeah, they're all, you know, fun doona covers.
Yeah, no, this was, I think it had birds all over it. It was an old one of Tim and my doona covers, and I took it out of the linen cupboard. And so I'm driving and I'm looking at other cars and thinking, how many other people are going to Wallaby Rescue?
Probably done.
Going to one. And I got there and this woman's got, so she's got out the front of her house a 15-foot brass statue of a giraffe. And I was like, well, that's something. And then I rang the doorbell and it played the song Happy Birthday. So at this point, I'm thinking to myself, is this an imaginary wallaby? That happens sometimes. Like, particularly elderly people, they go, oh, there was a lizard in my backyard and now I don't know where it is, but would you like to have a cup of tea?
Yeah.
So I rang the door, happy doorbell, and this woman comes out in this pink satin robe with a fluffy trim, an older lady with her hair fully blown up, like, you know, in a
bouffant.
Yeah, in that light bulb shape that elderly kind of do sometimes. And the first thing she says, she goes, stupid doorbell. And I said, no, actually, I love it. It's the first ding-dong happy birthday doorbell that I've ever come across, actually. And I said to her, have you got a wallaby in your backyard and a giraffe in your front yard? And she said, yes, like it was her fault. And I said, I can help you with one of those. So I went out the back and she's got this massive property and it's a huge sloping backyard and it's pitch black out there. And I said, well, where is it? And she said, it's out there somewhere. And I just heard thump, thump, thump. Thing has been startled by me opening the back door and it's come thumping down and it was like dinosaur feet stomping.
A glass of water was shaking.
and trees are like crashing because it's crashing through the undergrowth going from one top of the garden to the bottom. And I was like, okay, well, and I really had no plan because there's no how do you do it, because you don't usually have to do it. So I was literally just winging it.
How big was the wallaby, Candice? Had you seen it at this point?
It was up to, well, when I got near it, it was up to my waist. And we're talking 30 or 40 kilos because it's full muscle. It's just muscle. Yeah.
And just so you can visualize this, listeners, Candice is not a large woman. She's a normal sized person.
No, I do work out though. I work out.
Yeah, you do, but you know.
Yeah. Then I saw it. I saw it and, you know, I'd forgotten my proper torch, so I only had my phone torch. And I lit it up and I went, okay, there you are. And it was trying to hop over a fence and it couldn't get out. Good. And it just came into her yard somehow and then couldn't find its way out. And she said, well, what are you going to do? And I said, well, I'm going to put this creature under arrest. And I said, all right, well, I'm going to stay here. And I said, yeah, you stay there. And so I just kind of, it doesn't matter what you're trying to corral, like whether it's like a little baby bird or something. My own strategy, which I've come up with that you can use for any of these animals, is you squat down low and put your hands out, and then you just walk it into a corner. Yeah. And then when it's right in the corner, you just say to yourself, 3, 2, 1, snap. And that's it. That you just,
yeah,
like a snake. and I do that. I count myself into a lot of things in life. Like if I have to go up on a big stage or whatever, I go 3, 2, 1, go.
In the crouching position.
In the crouching position, she crouches onto the
crouch my way up.
I do key ups. Because I used to be a martial artist, and the thing you do in martial arts, if you're going to do something that you don't want to do because you know it's dangerous and you know it's going to hurt, you just go, ha! And then you do it. And as soon as you hear it come out of your mouth, you got to go.
You got to go.
But if you don't do it, you don't go.
Something takes over. It becomes like white noise. And so I just backed this thing all the way into a corner, and it had no choice but to come at me. And so it was hopping down the fence towards me, and it tried to get in between the fence and my body, and I just went like that, like, and I just grabbed it. I grabbed it by the shoulders. Sometimes I do this to Violet because Violet and I have WrestleMania, and we one of us will just go WrestleMania, ah, and then we just run. And we wrestle for as long as we wait until Tim says, "Careful, guys!" And you hear him.
Someone will get hurt.
I
broke my toe once putting my daughter to bed because part of the bedtime routine was wrestling, and she wanted me to come up with a new wrestling move every night because she does jiu-jitsu. So I'd read her a story, sing her a song, and then we'd wrestle. And I had to come up with a new one, and it was always like, the leaping flamingo or something, and there always had to be a run up, and then I'd sort of like jump in the air, spin, do some sort of like thing, and then land on top of her. And that was, and one night I did the run up and I ran into a piece of furniture and broke my toe.
Ouch.
Yeah, well, we do it until we hear Tim in the other room go, "Careful, guys," and then always wait. So anyway, so I just shoved this thing onto the ground, but then I've got my whole body on it, and I'm trying to, you know, and it's kicking and making terrible grunty noises. And so at this time I'd forgotten the doona cover, though, so I'm saying to the little old lady, "Give me the doona cover, break it over here." She was like, "Ugh." So I managed to wrestle it into the doona cover, though, by pulling the doona cover over its head and getting it halfway down its body and then all the way in. And then it was like the alien, you know, when the alien bursts out of the chest, it just went, shh, like, here, Johnny. It just came straight out of the doona cover like that. So I just kind of wrapped the doona cover around its head and the top half, and I grabbed the back ankles and I pinned them together. And I had to get my whole body under it, and I lifted it up like this, you know, and it's lying in my arms with its tail going over my arm, but the rest of it was swaddled in a way that very much looked like a child. Like, you can discern the head and the arms and the belly all wrapped in a doona cover, looking very much like your child. So I took it all away, and it's like this, like that. I took it all the way out to my car, and I'm trying to open the boot of my car, and these people are across the road in the dark walking their dog. And I couldn't think of anything else to say except I went, "It's not a child." And
hey, parents.
Yeah, you.
Are you looking for a podcast your kids will really love?
Well, we made one just for you.
And for us.
As genuine, all-natural kids ourselves, we know what makes a fun and interesting podcast.
So we decided to make it ourselves. Every show is packed with interviews, stories, and on-the-ground reporting.
We have interviewed everyone from scientists to Grammy Award-winning musicians to NFL quarterbacks.
Listen to Wild Interest wherever you get your podcasts.
I lifted the boot and I shoved it in, and I just sort of whacked the tail in like that and then slammed the boot. Anyway,
it's quite funny because that's how we get our kids into the car.
Yeah. You pin them by the crutch. I was saying this to some new parents the other day. I said, you're going to get to the stage where you can't get her in a car seat. Here's my tip, pin them by the crutch and then you can do everything else. Anyway, so I took it to the vet. And on my way to the vet, I called my, you know, boss at the rescue organisation, the animal rescue organisation, and I said, oh, I've got that wallaby, but, I got a little bit of a look at it at the scene and it's got some things about it that are concerning me, so I'm taking it to the vet. And she said, well, how did you do that? And I said, well, I just put it in the back of my car. And she said, but how? And I said, well, I just placed it under arrest. And I put it in the back of the car as one would with an unruly drunk man, I suppose. And she said, well, okay, but wallaby rescues are supposed to be a two-person rescue. Oh. And I went, oh. She said, ideally three people. And I was like, okay, well, I guess I didn't read that bit in the note book. So. And then I took it to the vet and the vet was like, oh, it's been hit by a car, has it? And I said, no,
it's been hit
it's
by
been whacked by Candace.
Hit by Candace. It's been hit by a fox.
So, you got taken down by a fox.
Yeah. And then they were all like, oh God, what do we do? You know, because they weren't used to that either. So it was so much fun.
That's so cool.
I want to know how far do you travel for these rescues, Candace? So, you know, you see this alert come up and you go, I will just drive from one end of Sydney to the other, or I will
drive from one end of Sydney to the other, depending on what it is. If it's something really interesting that I haven't rescued before, like that was about 25 minutes drive, but it's in my zone. Mm. It's my region. I'm trying to collect like the whole bingo card of Australia.
And yeah. I'd like to know, how many injuries have you acquired since you've been involved in this rescue mission?
While I was holding the wallaby down for the lady so that she could give it an injection and knock it out, my hand sort of slid up towards its throat and it bit me. And then the vet was like, oh, my God, oh, no. And I said, no, it's okay. I've never been bitten by a wallaby before. But I've been bitten by everything else. I've been bitten by a spoonbill. And somebody said, what's it like to be bitten by a spoonbill? And I said, well, it'd be exactly like if somebody got two spoons. And they went,
yeah. I got bitten by a crimson rosella on my fingertip once, and I have never known pain like it. It is seriously worse than childbirth, because it's all your nerve endings, and those beaks are designed to crack nuts. And I was trying to save it out of it. It got caught in some netting. So I picked it up and it just like latched on my fingertip, and I'm like, I could just squeeze my hand and kill you, and you're trying to hurt me.
I've been bitten several times by possums because I just couldn't be bothered. I'm a little bit of a lazy rescuer, and sometimes I just couldn't be bothered with the gloves because half of these things can bite you through the gloves anyway. And I just feel I'm trying to cultivate that skill of being able to grab these things without getting bitten. And it's funny because I go to these rescues a lot of the time, and there's a man there, and he's called in the rescue, and he's there with his wife. And they get a bit huffy, you know, because I turn up and I'm like, hi, is it okay? Awesome that you weren't man enough to grab yourself. and then to do it with my bare hands is extra insulting, I suppose. And so, one of them said to me the other day, can I ask you a question? How did you pick it up? I said, I just went like this. Ugh.
In Bowral one day we had a kangaroo come down Main Street, and I don't know if you know Bowral, but the Main Street of Bowral is called Bong Bong Street.
Boing Boing Street.
I tell this story when I'm in America. The kids love hearing about Australian animals, so I always say, so the kangaroo was going boing boing down Bong Bong Street. And everyone, they love that bit. But the person who caught it was Tony Lockett.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, because he lives locally. He's like got greyhounds. And he was in Corbett Plaza. So you go down Bong Bong Street and there's like a bit of a plaza where, you know, there's no traffic. The kangaroo turned in there. Tony Lockett just happened to be walking past. And for people who don't know who Tony Lockett is, he was an AFL player who had the most goals ever in AFL. He's a really big bloke and really, really good at AFL. So anyway, he's walking along, but he doesn't like anybody to realize that he's Tony Lockett. So everyone just pretends, oh, I don't realize that this massive guy is Tony Lockett. But yeah, everyone knows. And anyway, he was walking along. The kangaroo just hopped towards him. He just reached down, caught its tail, and he just held it like that.
Yeah. And he just held. When something's going along a fence, and I go, I got to move now, like, you know, because it's seen me and it's get on the move, and I got to move now. And I just grab the tail, and then I hold the tail, and then I go, all right, can you pass me that thing over there? Because if you've got the base of the tail, they can't do anything. They're stuffed, you know.
That's what Tony Lockett did. He just hung on to it for like 10 minutes. They went and got someone from the vet to come down and they gave it something to make it sleepy, and then they took it off to the vet. But it was right outside the newspaper office. So the photojournalist came out, took a photo and said, oh, Tony Lockett, have you got a comment? And he's like, he's really shy. And he's like, I don't do media. And he just walked off.
But the local where was the wallaby? Where was the wallaby? Slung around his shoulders at this stage?
No, the vet took it away respectfully. Oh, the vet.
Right.
So the local media didn't show the picture and didn't run the story, but it was in the Sydney Morning Herald because they didn't care about Tony Lockett's privacy.
A fun feeling though. You know, to be that, because everyone looks, you know, and I feel like a bit of a hero. I get the one that I get a lot of the time is it's an elderly person and they've got a blue tongue under their fridge. Blue tongue lizard under their fridge or behind a big cabinet, and they're like, I can't even get down on my knees to look to see it down there. I can just see the tail sticking out. And so Violet and I have come up with a strategy. We use what's called the coat hanger of destiny. It worked for us once and we kept it forever. And I said, we've got to put this in the back of the car. This will be the coat hanger of destiny. And we always use the same coat hanger. And we just bent it all the way around and then back on itself right at the tip so that it hasn't got a sharp tip. And you just come around behind the lizard and you just go under its tail.
Yep.
And it goes, oh, God, something's touching me, you know, and then comes out. And
the lizard tickler.
Yeah, exactly.
Awesome.
Oh, very good. Well,
okay, yes. Jackie, you're up. What's your story?
I've been thinking about rescue stories. I've got a very funny story about an uncle of mine who thought that he was rescuing a snake in the national park one day. Really, he wasn't rescuing it. He was stealing it because my cousin, he used to collect reptiles and he had like a tank of reptiles. And he thought, you know, I'll take this home for my cousin to have a look at and then we'll release it back into the bush again. But, you know, it's an interesting little snake. And anyway, so my uncle was also an ultra marathon runner who used to like to run really vast distances for no good reason, you know, just because he could. And so he's running through the bush and he sees this little snake and he thinks, oh, Stuart would really love this snake. I'm going to just pick him up and I'm going to take him home and give him a look and then we'll release it back again.
This is so irresponsible on so many levels.
Completely.
There's so many red flags here. He likes to run thousands of kilometres and he likes to just pick up snakes for fun.
Random snakes. So he's got the snake. He's got the snake basically the head under his thumb. I mean, it's a little, like it's not a big snake. It's a little baby snake, right? So he's got the head under his thumb and he's running through the bush and he's going like, you know, chomp, 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 pound, pound, pound through the bush and his hand gets a cramp. So he decides he needs to change hands. And as he changes hands, the snake bites him in the webbing between his thumb and his forefinger.
Oh, no.
So he's now being envenomated by the snake between his thumb and his forefinger.
You just make that word up.
Envenomated is a word. So anyway, he then goes like this and he goes like shakes his hand and the snake flies off into the bush. So he now does not know exactly what type of snake has bitten him.
I just want to say he totally deserved that and good for the snake.
Would have been pumping because of the running.
Exactly.
I mean, cut to snake news that night, and there's this, and he tried to abduct me, but I fought my way back. And the snake's parents are like, we're so glad to have her home. A really close call. Keep going, kids, save.
Well, it gets worse because he goes home and he sort of feels like, I need to have a bath. So after you've been bitten by a snake, the last thing you would do is get into a warm bath. And my auntie comes home and he's like, and she's like, are you okay? And he's like, oh, I'm not feeling so well. But he neglects to tell her that the reason he's not feeling well is because he's been bitten by a snake.
Because
anyway.
So dumb. Like, what is he going to say? I tried to bring a snake home and it bit me. Sorry, Mum.
Well, it gets to the point where he is now, like, sweating and feeling like he's going to die. So he has to confess that he got bitten by a snake trying to bring a snake home. So anyway, my auntie takes him to the hospital and they're pretty sure that the snake that he had picked up was a brown snake.
Oh,
So he has the anti-venom. He lives to tell the story. It is kind of legendary, hilariously, dumb things to do, dumb ways to almost die story. Yeah.
This is like Darwin Award stuff. This person should be removed from the gene pool.
So anyway, so that's one rescue story, which was not really a rescue, but he needed rescuing after he thought that he was, going to do something nice for his son. But my other story that
just imagine how that could have played out. He brings home the brown snake, gives it to his son, and the son gets bitten by the brown snake.
Exactly. So, yeah. So anyway, that's, he's only an uncle by marriage. It's not, I'm not blood related to this guy. So anyway, the other story is about my mum who actually did rescue. So it's about a rescued dog that my dad brought home from, he'd been working on a job somewhere. My dad is a cabinet maker and he would often be working, all over the place. And there was this old English sheepdog called Winston. And the people said, oh, no, we can't keep Winston anymore. And I think they were older and they couldn't really handle him or whatever. And Dad thought, oh, I'll take him home because we always had dogs and cats and what have you. Anyway, so Winston just turned out to be fairly difficult. He was a very, very difficult rescue dog. And he would kind of, you'd go to groom him and he would try and bite you. And, he was just not an easy dog to be around. So anyway, one day he decides, obviously, that it's time to have a swim. And he jumps into our swimming pool and he, for whatever reason, he was not a dog who'd ever learned to dog paddle. And so this dog is now drowning in the swimming pool. And he's a full-sized old English sheepdog, right? Massive dog. Yes. So my mother gets in the pool to try and push the dog out, and the dog almost killed her. And so seriously,
you never
like
get
pushed,
in the pool.
Well, pushed my mother under the water, and only that I happened to be home and saw her like struggling with the dog on top of her. So anyway, we dragged the dog out of the water. And anyway, Winston ended up being rescued by somebody else after that because Dad was not gonna have him.
I had like four rescues. Rescued Winston. And then you rescued your mum and Winston.
I rescued my mum. Yes. Mum tried to rescue the dog. She almost died. It was a bad, bad story.
When I worked at Good Newsweek and we would go through the newspapers and find all the silly stories, we used to have a collection of stories, which is people who die trying to rescue dogs that then don't die because they rescue themselves.
Yes. Yeah, well, that probably would have been how this played out, I'm sure. Fortunately, mum... I just remember him like pushing on her because he was so big and he's like pushing on her and she's trying to lift him up. And my mum's about half the size of you, Candace, and you're not a large person at all. And so my poor mother's like,
And those English sheepdogs with all that hair, it would be like in romance novels when women fall into water and they're wearing the ridiculous dresses and the dresses like suck them down.
Yes.
So there you go.
It's such a Hollywood plot device, isn't it, where you have, the characters are escaping from something and it's always the pet dog that makes them turn and go the other way.
Yeah.
So I used to live back in 2001 and 2002 and three, my first 3 years of primary school teaching, I moved out to a very, very little country, I'll call it a country town, out past North Richmond called Tennyson. Have any of you guys heard of
Tennyson? Yes, I know where that is.
Yeah. I think Sydney actually has two Tennysons.
Yeah, there's one in the suburb somewhere and there's one out
there. Yeah, and it's a big, large property, absolutely beautiful. We'd spend from 4 p.m. every afternoon, my auntie who I was living with and my uncle, they would finish work pretty early and we'd get home. And from about 4 p.m. onwards, you just sit, facing the Blue Mountains and watch the sunset behind the Blue Mountains and have a, you know, some cheese and a beer or something, cheese and wine. It was this beautiful place to live. But there are a lot of native animals when you're living on property out in the sticks. And sometimes my uncle and auntie would sort of, they'd pop out for dinner on a weeknight. They were really good neighbours, and they had this lovely network of neighbours that they would just sort of, they would take turns, you know, hosting each other for dinners. And whenever they went out, it would leave my cousin and I. She was in high school at the time, and we'd just sort of, you know, stay back and, you know, watch television or whatever. And they're out one evening, all the doors are open, beautiful breeze is blowing through, and we're sort of just, you know, chilling out on the couch watching Home and Away or something. And the cat, Ragamuffin, sort of strolls through the door and drops something with a long tail onto the rug. And Tegan and I look at it, and then we look at each other, and we're thinking, is it a bush rat? Is it a mouse? It's something with a long tail. And we're sort of starting to ask each other, well, what should we do? Is it dead? And Ragamuffin's just sort of, you know, just there proudly. And we decide, well, we better go and investigate. We better try and pick up this thing and see what it actually is and if it's alive and yada, yada. So we both go to the kitchen, and then we come back, and the cat's still there, but then there's no animal on the rug. And
no creature.
Well, no creature. And so the next question was, well, if we think maybe has it been eaten? Is it possible for a cat just to eat something like that quickly? Does Ragamuffin have this history of eating, you know, poor native wildlife? And we're just trying to work out what on earth has gone on. But upon closer investigation, there was absolutely no sign that this thing had been eaten. So we're now thinking, well, it was alive and it's just disappeared somewhere. Where could it be? Has it gone outside? So we start turning the house upside down, looking for this thing with the long tail. We go all through the living room where the rug was, all through, you know, through the lower parts of the house. We eventually get to my cousin's bedroom, and it's got all these, yeah, she's got all these soft toys and pillows, and we hear a noise under it, under this big collection of soft, and we're like, this is it. We found it. How good are we? We're going to rescue this poor bush rat or mouse or whatever it is with a long tail. And so we start, there were so many pillows and soft toys. We're literally just tossing them out behind. And eventually we get down to the last two pillows. And it is so obvious that this rat / mouse, whatever it is there. And we take a pillow each and we pull it off. And there was a rabbit.
Rabbit.
Upon looking for one animal, we've actually discovered another. Now the mission was on this rabbit, and so we bounded away.
And you were like,
and threw it out.
Have you seen that?
Unless it was
like a children's, and then you rabbits. Go to the next room, and there's like a badger.
Because this rabbit wouldn't have had a long tail. I mean, this rabbit would have had a little tail. So, did you find the other thing?
That's right. So, well, then the focus completely shifted because the little first thing was so small, and this rabbit is so big, and it's causing carnage. And so then we're running around the house trying to get this rabbit out. And eventually we did, because the focus was so much on the rabbit, we did get it out, but we never found out what happened to the other one. It was just the bizarre thing about that story is it just took such a twist that we didn't expect. Like, you're looking, you know, when you're looking for something, all you can picture is that. And so when the pillows were removed and it was actually a rabbit, it was such a big moment of, oh, my goodness. And we still talk about that story today.
Ta-da. my cat bought in a my cat was quite good at our cat is a rescue cat, which I think I've talked about before, but
it is not a rescue cat, Jackie.
He your rescued cat us.
No, it's like a moocher.
Our cat chose us, Candace. So our cat belonged to somebody else and then was our visitor cat for 4 years. And anyway, when he got very comfortable with us, he did used to bring us the odd gift. And, you know, it would be kind of like he would turn up at the back door and he would have a giant rat in his mouth and he'd like, boom, on the back doorstep, like, here, have a present. I bought you a rat. He brought home, he came in the back door and he would always announce his gift giving. And it was always with a, you know, this sort of weird meowing. Anyway, he's meowing, but he's not really opening his mouth. And then I see this tiny tail flicking in the corner of his mouth, and this tail is like really going for it. And so I'm like, it's alive in his mouth. And so I somehow managed to get him to spit out baby mouse. And then, of course, it's on for young and old in the house because I was thinking, don't go under the fridge, don't go under the dishwasher, I'll never find you ever again. So here I am, like, leaping all over the house trying to get this this tiny baby mouse. Anyway, I was very pleased with myself because I rescued that baby mouse and returned it to the garden.
Yeah.
Well done.
Dory, Tim reminds me of I used to teach I used to be a supply teacher when I lived in Queensland, and so I'd go to different schools and I always clean up the teacher's desk because then I figured I would get more work. They'd come and they'd go, oh, my God, what a great person. I'm going to put her on the list as my go-to. I was cleaning up this desk once and it was 3 foot high with papers, kindergarten teacher, and it was all artwork and stuff. And as I was going through, I started finding pieces of unpopped popcorn.
Oh.
And I was like, there's to be more and more popcorn. And then I was going down and down and down and down and down, and I got to the last sheet of paper over the packet of popcorn, and I lifted it up and 6 mice all went and one of them ran straight at me and onto my belly and went down my legs, but the others just split. But I think about the mice that are in there. And they're like, something's coming. We're going to wait for the very last second, though. And they're all, should we go? No, don't go. Don't go. Not yet. Yeah. I think this is the last pack. Already go. And then they all go.
they're like you with the 3, 2, 1, go.
Go.
I taught my kindergarten class how to do tallies 1 year because we had a massive mouse plague. It was when I was living down in Barrel, Rachel. And we had a terrible mouse plague at the school where I was working. And so we used to set traps in the classroom. I mean, kindergarten, I think OH&S, there would be a big issue with this now because I used to just have traps set all around the classroom. And the kids would hear that. And they'd go, we got one. And then the kids would run into the locker room or whatever and they'd bring it out. They'd be like, we got one. And they ended up. They learned how to tally. I had 16 in one day. That was my best effort.
Whoa.
When we first moved to Barrel, we got chooks. I've always wanted to keep chooks.
Yeah.
And we'd been here like 9 months and a fox got the chooks, which is, it just happens when you have chooks, every couple of years a fox gets them. But my kids had never had it happen before and the feathers just everywhere. And I thought they'd be upset and I was worried about it. So I went out and I picked up every single feather in the garden and I put it all away and then I gave them a talk. Oh, so sad. The chickens died last night. And they're like, oh, okay, mommy. Anyway, she went into school. And another kid in her class, same thing had happened. A fox had got their chooks that night, but he was a country kid. So he brought all the feathers in for craft. They did this sort of a collage of Christmas trees made out of black chicken feathers. And Violet brought it home. It's like, someone else lost their chooks too. And look at my beautiful craft.
Oh, well, it's recycling, isn't it?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And exactly. You know, you say that the chickens get eaten by foxes. You know, in New Zealand, there are no foxes. So the chickens here do not get eaten by foxes at all.
Do they die?
They get taken by hawks. They get taken by great big hawks that sit above their coops because there's no real predators for them. We have weasels and stoats, which are really interesting. And the other thing that you would love, Candace, there are we have hedgehogs. And I have a hedgehog that lives in my garden.
Just recently that there are hedgehogs in New Zealand.
No, they're not native. And you don't want to see them in the daytime because that generally means they're not very well. But we have this really sweet little one that lives in our garden that usually you'll just see him at nighttime. He comes across the driveway. He's very, very cute.
I'll take you on a mission. Like they're going to lead you somewhere down at the mission.
Candace, you really need to write picture books. You've got,
No, Rachel, no, she doesn't because she's good at every single thing that she does. And so she'll knock all of our books out of the shops and she'll be the number one.
Jackie, children's writing is not a competitive sport. We will rise up together, rising tide.
Oh, that's nice.
No, we will. It's true. Like J.K. Rowling was good for all of us in terms of encouraging literacy. So I would love to see you write some children's books.
That is true, Rachel. I was kidding.
Yeah, yeah.
But I'm not kidding that she's good at everything because she totally is.
Violet and I come up with children's book ideas every now and then. And the one that I loved, which I reckon this is what I'd do if I was going to write a children's book, she came up with this guy named Doublebeard. and he's a pirate, and he has two beards, and he has to have two of everything. And one day he realizes that he doesn't need two of everything.
Oh, that's a great story.
That's like a reverse Noah's Ark.
Yeah. And you just, I should do that one time.
No, don't steal her idea. She'll see you.
I don't have any speed time.
I also think you should do a book, Candace, called Snake News.
Yes.
Because we get ants here, and every now and then we give them the ant poison, and the poison goes in and kills them all, and you have this big massacre when Violet's not around. I sometimes do ant news to Tim, and I'll go, "Horror today at the backyard where 7,000 people have been killed." I just do the whole headline, "Bodies everywhere."
And on that cheerful note, we've got to wrap things up. So we will end it now. So thank you so much, Candace Fox, for joining us. That was really awesome. If you want to find out more about any of us, Candace, what's your website?
Oh,
I can tell you if you don't know.
CandaceFoxAuthor.org, I think.
No, it's Candace Fox.
Oh, it's CandaceFox.org, is it?
CandaceFox.org. Thank you. And you can find me at raspratt.com. And Jackie, where are you?
At jacquelineharvey.com.au.
And Tim?
TimHarrisBooks.com.
Okay. Thank you very much for listening. Until next time, goodbye. Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed the show, please do give us a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or whatever platform you're listening to this on right now. If you could subscribe, follow, and share it with your friends, that would be awesome too. Every little bit helps us build an audience, and the bigger the audience, the longer we can justify procrastinating from our real jobs to bring this podcast to you.